wonder her friends were dazed. Was this what people felt when Piper used charm speak? A feeling of guilt settled over her. She summoned all her willpower. No, I won't pay any price. But a fair price, maybe. After that, we need to leave, right, guys? Just for a moment, her words seemed to have some effect. The boys looked confused. Leave, Jason said.
You mean, after shopping? Leo asked.
Piper wanted to scream, but the princess tilted her head, examining Piper with newfound respect.
Impressive, the princess said. Not many people could resist my suggestions. Are you a child of Aphrodite, my dear?
Ah, yes. I should have seen it.
No matter. Perhaps we should shop a while longer before you decide what to buy, eh?
But the vial.
Now, boys.
She turned to Jason and Leo. Her voice was so much more powerful than Piper's, so full of confidence, Piper didn't stand a chance.
Would you like to see more?
Sure, Jason said.
Okay,
Leo said.
Excellent, the princess said. You'll need all the help you can get if you're to make it to the Bay Area.
Piper's hand moved to her dagger. She thought about her dream of the mountaintop. The scene Enceladus had shown her, a place she knew, where she was supposed to betray her friends in 2 days.
The Bay Area? Piper said. Why the Bay Area?
The princess smiled.
Well, that's where they'll die, isn't it?
Then she led them toward the escalators, Jason and Leo still looking excited to shop. Chapter 28. Piper. Piper cornered the princess as Jason and Leo went off to check out the living fur coats.
You want them shopping for their deaths? Piper demanded.
The princess blew dust off a display case of swords.
I'm a seer, my dear. I know your little secret, but we don't want to dwell on that, do we? The boys are having such fun.
Leo laughed as he tried on a hat that seemed to be made from enchanted raccoon fur. Its ringed tail twitched, and its little legs wiggled frantically as Leo walked. Jason was ogling the men's sportswear. Boys interested in shopping for clothes? A definite sign they were under an evil spell. Piper glared at the princess.
Who are you?
I told you, my dear. I'm the princess of Colchis.
Where's Colchis?
The princess's expression turned a little sad.
Where was Colchis? You mean, my father ruled the far shores of the Black Sea, as far to the east as a Greek ship could sail in those days. But Colchis is no more, lost eons ago.
Eons? Piper asked.
The princess looked no more than 50, but a bad feeling started settling over Piper. Something King Boreas had mentioned back in Quebec.
How old are you?
The princess laughed.
A lady should avoid asking or answering that question. Let's just say the, immigration process to enter your country took quite a while. My patron finally brought me through. She made all this possible.
The princess swept her hand around the department store. Piper's mouth tasted like metal.
Your patron?
Oh, yes. She doesn't bring just anyone through, mind you. Only those who have special talents, such as me. And really, she insists on so little. A store entrance that must be underground so she can, monitor my clientele. And a favor now and then.
In exchange for a new life? Really, it was the best bargain I'd made in centuries.
Run, Piper thought. We have to get out of here.
But before she could even turn her thoughts into words, Jason called,
Hey, check it out!
From a rack labeled Distressed Clothing, he held up a purple t-shirt like the one he'd worn on the school field trip. Except this shirt looked as if it had been clawed by tigers. Jason frowned.
Why does this look so familiar?
Jason, it's like yours, Piper said. Now we really have to leave. But she wasn't sure he could even hear her anymore through the princess's enchantment.
Nonsense, the princess said. The boys aren't done, are they? And yes, my dear, those shirts are very popular. Trade-ins from previous customers. It suits you.
Leo picked up an orange Camp Half-Blood tee with a hole through the middle, as if it had been hit by a javelin. Next to that was a dented bronze breastplate pitted with corrosion. Acid, maybe? And a Roman toga slashed to pieces and stained with something that looked disturbingly like dried blood.
Your Highness, Piper said, trying to control her nerves. Why don't you tell the boys how you betrayed your family? I'm sure they'd like to hear that story.
Her words didn't have any effect on the princess, but the boys turned, suddenly interested.
More story? Leo asked.
I like more story, Jason agreed.
The princess flashed Piper an irritated look.
Oh, one will do strange things for love, Piper. You should know that. I fell for that young hero, in fact, because your mother, Aphrodite, had me under a spell. If it wasn't for her... But I can't hold a grudge against a goddess, can I?
The princess's tone made her meaning clear. I can take it out on you.
But that hero took you with him when he fled Colchis, Piper remembered. Didn't he, Your Highness? He married you just as he promised.
The look in the princess's eyes made Piper want to apologize, but she didn't back down.
At first, Her Highness admitted, it seemed he would keep his word. But even after I helped him steal my father's treasure, he still needed my help. As we fled, my brother's fleet came after us. His warships overtook us. He would have destroyed us. But I convinced my brother to come aboard our ship first and talk under a flag of truce. He trusted me.
And you killed your own brother, Piper said.
The horrible story all coming back to her, along with a name. An infamous name that began with the letter M.
What?
Jason stirred. For a moment he looked almost like himself.
Killed your own...
No, the princess snapped. Those stories are lies. It was my new husband and his men who killed my brother, though they couldn't have done it without my deception. They threw his body into the sea, and the pursuing fleet had to stop and search for it so they could give my brother a proper burial. This gave us time to get away. All this I did for my husband, and he forgot our bargain. He betrayed me in the end.
Jason still looked uncomfortable.
What did he do?
The princess held the sliced-up toga against Jason's chest, as if measuring him for an assassination.
Don't you know the story, my boy? You, of all people, should. You were named for him.
Jason, Piper said. The original Jason. But then you're... You should be dead.
The princess smiled.
As I said, a new life in a new country. Certainly I made mistakes. I turned my back on my own people. I was called a traitor, a thief, a liar, a murderess. But I acted out of love.
She turned to the boys and gave them a pitiful look, batting her eyelashes. Piper could feel the sorcery washing over them, taking control more firmly than ever.
"Wouldn't you do the same for someone you loved, my dears?"
"Oh, sure," Jason said.
"Okay,"
Leo said.
"Guys!" Piper ground her teeth in frustration. "Don't you see who she is? Don't you..."
"Let's continue, shall we?"
the princess said breezily.
"I believe you wanted to talk about a price for the storm spirits and your satyr."
Leo got distracted on the second floor with the appliances.
"No way," he said. "Is that an armored forge?"
Before Piper could stop him, he hopped off the escalator and ran over to a big oval oven that looked like a barbecue on steroids. When they caught up with him, the princess said,
"You have good taste. This is the H-2000, designed by Hephaestus himself. Hot enough to melt celestial bronze or imperial gold."
Jason flinched, as if he recognized that term.
"Imperial gold?"
The princess nodded.
"Yes, my dear. Like that weapon so cleverly concealed in your pocket. To be properly forged, imperial gold had to be consecrated in the Temple of Jupiter on Capitoline Hill in Rome. Quite a powerful and rare metal, but like the Roman emperors, quite volatile. Be sure never to break that blade."
She smiled pleasantly.
"Rome was after my time, of course, but I do hear stories. And now, over here, this golden throne is one of my finest luxury items. Hephaestus made it as a punishment for his mother, Hera. Sit in it, and you'll be immediately trapped."
Leo apparently took this as an order. He began walking toward it in a trance.
"Leo, don't!"
Piper warned. He blinked.
"How much for both?"
"Oh, the seat I could let you have for 5 great deeds, the forge, 7 years of servitude, and for only a bit of your strength."
She led Leo into the appliance section, giving him prices on various items. Piper didn't want to leave him alone with her, but she had to try reasoning with Jason. She pulled him aside and slapped him across the face.
"Ow," he muttered sleepily. "What was that for?"
"Snap out of it," Piper hissed.
"What do you mean?"
"She's charm-speaking you. Can't you feel it?"
He knit his eyebrows.
"She seems okay."
"She's not okay. She shouldn't even be alive. She was married to Jason, the other Jason, 3,000 years ago. Remember what Boreas said, something about the souls no longer being confined to Hades? It's not just monsters who can't stay dead. She's come back from the underworld."
Jason shook his head uneasily.
"She's not a ghost."
"No, she's worse. She's..."
"Children!"
The princess was back with Leo in tow.
"If you please, we will now see what you came for. That is what you want, yes?"
Piper had to choke back a scream. She was tempted to pull out her dagger and take on this witch herself, but she didn't like her chances. Not in the middle of Her Highness's department store while her friends were under a spell. Piper couldn't even be sure they'd take her side in a fight. She had to figure out a better plan. They took the escalator down to the base of the fountain. For the first time, Piper noticed 2 large bronze sundials, each about the size of a trampoline, inlaid on the marble tile floor to the north and south of the fountain. The gilded oversized canary cages stood to the east and west, and the farthest one held the storm spirits. They were so densely packed, spinning around like a super-concentrated tornado, that Piper couldn't tell how many there were. Dozens, at least.
Hey, Leo said. Coach Hedge looks okay.
They ran to the nearest canary cage. The old satyr seemed to have been petrified at the moment he was sucked into the sky above the Grand Canyon. He was frozen mid-shout, his club raised over his head like he was ordering the gym class to drop and give him 50. His curly hair stuck up at odd angles. If Piper just concentrated on certain details, the bright orange polo shirt, the wispy goatee, the whistle around his neck, she could imagine Coach Hedge as his good old annoying self. But it was hard to ignore the stubby horns on his head and the fact that he had furry goat legs and hooves instead of workout pants and Nikes.
Yes, the princess said, I always keep my wares in good condition. We can certainly barter for the storm spirits and the satyr. A package deal, if we come to terms. I'll even throw in the vial of healing potion, and you can go in peace.
She gave Piper a shrewd look.
That's better than starting unpleasantness, isn't it, dear?
Don't trust her, warned a voice in her head.
If Piper was right about this lady's identity, nobody would be leaving in peace. A fair deal wasn't possible. It was all a trick. But her friends were looking at her, nodding urgently and mouthing, "Say yes." Piper needed more time to think.
"We can negotiate," she said.
"Totally," Leo agreed. "Name your price."
"Leo," Piper snapped.
The princess chuckled.
"Name my price? Perhaps not the best haggling strategy, my boy, but at least you know a thing's value. Freedom is very valuable indeed. You would ask me to release this satyr who attacked my storm winds?"
"Who attacked us?" Piper interjected. Her Highness shrugged.
"As I said, my patron asks me for small favors from time to time, sending the storm spirits to abduct you. That was one. I assure you it was nothing personal, and no harm done, as you came here in the end, of your own free will. At any rate, you want the satyr freed, and you want my storm spirits, who are very valuable servants, by the way, so you can hand them over to that tyrant Aeolus. Doesn't seem quite fair, does it? The price will be high."
Piper could see that her friends were ready to offer anything, promise anything. Before they could speak, she played her last card.
"You're Medea," she said. "You helped the original Jason steal the Golden Fleece. You're one of the most evil villains in Greek mythology. Jason, Leo, don't trust her."
Piper put all the intensity she could gather into those words. She was utterly sincere, and it seemed to have some effect. Jason stepped away from the sorceress. Leo scratched his head and looked around like he was coming out of a dream.
"What are we doing again?"
"Boys."
The princess spread her hands in a welcoming gesture. Her diamond jewelry glittered, and her painted fingers curled like blood-tipped claws.
"It's true. I'm Medea. But I'm so misunderstood. Oh, Piper, my dear, you don't know what it was like for women in the old days. We had no power, no leverage. Often, we couldn't even choose our own husbands. But I was different. I chose my own destiny by becoming a sorceress. Is that so wrong? I made a pact with Jason. My help to win the fleece, in exchange for his love. A fair deal. He became a famous hero. Without me, he would have died unknown on the shores of Colchis."
Jason, Piper's Jason, scowled. "Then you really did die 3,000 years ago?
You came back from the underworld?
Death no longer holds me, young hero, Medea said. Thanks to my patron, I am flesh and blood again.
You reformed? Leo blinked. Like a monster?
Medea spread her fingers, and steam hissed from her nails, like water splashed on hot iron.
You have no idea what's happening, do you, my dears? It is so much worse than a stirring of monsters from Tartarus. My patron knows that giants and monsters are not her greatest servants. I am mortal. I learn from my mistakes. And now that I have returned to the living, I will not be cheated again. Now, here is my price for what you ask.
Guys, Piper said, the original Jason left Medea because she was crazy and bloodthirsty.
Lies, Medea said.
On the way back from Colchis, Jason's ship landed at another kingdom, and Jason agreed to dump Medea and marry the king's daughter.
After I bore him 2 children, Medea said. Still he broke his promise. I ask you, was that right?
Jason and Leo dutifully shook their heads, but Piper wasn't through. It may not have been right, she said, but neither was Medea's revenge. She murdered her own children to get back at Jason. She poisoned his new wife and fled the kingdom.
Medea snarled. An invention to ruin my reputation. The people of Corinth, that unruly mob, killed my children and drove me out. Jason did nothing to protect me. He robbed me of everything. So yes, I sneaked back into the palace and poisoned his lovely new bride. It was only fair, a suitable price.
You're insane, Piper said.
I am the victim, Medea wailed. I died with my dreams shattered, but no longer. I know now not to trust heroes. When they come asking for treasures, they will pay a heavy price, especially when the one asking has the name of Jason.
The fountain turned bright red. Piper drew her dagger, but her hand was shaking almost too badly to hold it. Jason, Leo, it's time to go. Now.
Before you've closed the deal? Medea asked. What of your quest, boys? And my price is so easy. Did you know this fountain is magic? If a dead man were to be thrown into it, even if he was chopped to pieces, he would pop back out fully formed, stronger and more powerful than ever.
Seriously? Leo asked.
Leo, she's lying, Piper said. She did that trick with somebody before. A king, I think. She convinced his daughters to cut him to pieces so he could come out of the water young and healthy again, but it just killed him.
Ridiculous, Medea said,
and Piper could hear the power charged in every syllable.
Leo, Jason, my price is so simple. Why don't you two fight? If you get injured, or even killed, no problem. We'll just throw you into the fountain and you'll be better than ever. You do want to fight, don't you? You resent each other.
Guys, no, Piper said. But they were already glaring at each other, as if it was just dawning on them how they really felt. Piper had never felt more helpless. Now she understood what real sorcery looked like. She'd always thought magic meant wands and fireballs, but this was worse. Medea didn't just rely on poisons and potions. Her most potent weapon was her voice. Leo scowled.
Jason's always the star. He always gets the attention and takes me for granted.
You're annoying, Leo, Jason said. You never take anything seriously.
You can't even fix a dragon.
Stop,
Piper pleaded. But both drew weapons. Jason his gold sword and Leo a hammer from his tool belt.
Let them go, Piper,
Medea urged.
I'm doing you a favor.
Let it happen now, and it will make your choice so much easier. Enceladus will be pleased. You could have your father back today.
Medea's charm speak didn't work on her, but the sorceress still had a persuasive voice. Her father back today? Despite her best intentions, Piper wanted that. She wanted her father back so much, it hurt.
You work for Enceladus, she said.
Medea laughed. Serve a giant? No. But we all serve the same greater cause, a patron you cannot begin to challenge. Walk away, child of Aphrodite. This does not have to be your death, too. Save yourself, and your father can go free. Leo and Jason were still facing off, ready to fight, but they looked unsteady and confused, waiting for another order. Part of them had to be resisting, Piper hoped. This went completely against their nature.
Listen to me, girl.
Medea plucked a diamond off her bracelet and threw it into a spray of water from the fountain. As it passed through the multicolored light, Medea said,
Oh, Iris, goddess of the rainbow, show me the office of Tristan MacLaine.
The mist shimmered, and Piper saw her father's study. Sitting behind his desk, talking on the phone, was her dad's assistant, Jane, in her dark business suit, her hair swirled in a tight bun.
Hello, Jane,
Medea said. Jane hung up the phone calmly.
How can I help you, ma'am?
Hello, Piper.
You!
Piper was so angry she could hardly talk.
Yes, child,
Medea said.
Your father's assistant. Quite easy to manipulate. An organized mind for a mortal, but incredibly weak.
Thank you, ma'am, Jane said.
Don't mention it, Medea said.
I just wanted to congratulate you, Jane. Getting Mr. MacLaine to leave town so suddenly, take his jet to Oakland without alerting the press or the police. Well done. No one seems to know where he's gone. And telling him his daughter's life was on the line, that was a nice touch to get his cooperation.
Yes, Jane agreed in a bland tone, as if she were sleepwalking. He was quite cooperative when he believed Piper was in danger. Piper looked down at her dagger. The blade trembled in her hand. She couldn't use it for a weapon any better than Helen of Troy could. But it was still a looking glass, and what she saw in it was a scared girl with no chance of winning.
I may have new orders for you, Jane, Medea said. If the girl cooperates, it may be time for Mr. MacLaine to come home. Would you arrange a suitable cover story for his absence, just in case? And I imagine the poor man will need some time in a psychiatric hospital.
Yes, ma'am. I will stand by.
The image faded, and Medea turned to Piper.
There. You see?
You lured my dad into a trap, Piper said.
You helped the giant.
Oh, please, dear.
You'll work yourself into a fit.
I've been preparing for this war for years, even before I was brought back to life. I'm a seer, as I said. I can tell the future as well as your little oracle. Years ago, still suffering in the fields of punishment, I had a vision of the seven in your so-called great prophecy. I saw your friend Leo here, and saw that he would be an important enemy someday. I stirred the consciousness of my patron, gave her this information,
and she managed to wake just a little, just enough to visit him.
Leo's mother, Piper said. Leo, listen to this. She helped get your mother killed.
Uh-huh, Leo mumbled in a daze. He frowned at his hammer.
So, I just attacked Jason? That's okay?
Perfectly safe, Medea promised. And Jason, strike him hard. Show me you are worthy of your namesake.
No,
Piper ordered. She knew it was her last chance.
Jason, Leo, she's tricking you. Put down your weapons.
The sorceress rolled her eyes.
Please, girl, you're no match for me. I trained with my aunt, the immortal Circe. I can drive men mad or heal them with my voice. What hope do these puny young heroes have against me? Now, boys, kill each other.
Jason, Leo, listen to me.
Piper put all of her emotion into her voice. For years, she'd been trying to control herself and not show weakness. But now she poured everything into her words, her fear, her desperation, her anger. She knew she might be signing her dad's death warrant, but she cared too much about her friends to let them hurt each other.
Medea is charming you. It's part of her magic. You are best friends. Don't fight each other. Fight her.
They hesitated. And Piper could feel the spell shatter. Jason blinked.
Leo, was I just about to stab you? Something about my mother.
Leo frowned, then turned toward Medea.
You're working for Dirt Woman. You sent her to the machine shop.
He lifted his arm.
Lady, I got a 3-pound hammer with your name on it.
Bah, Medea sneered. I'll simply collect payment another way.
She pressed one of the mosaic tiles on the floor, and the building rumbled. Jason swung his sword at Medea, but she dissolved into smoke and reappeared at the base of the escalator.
You're slow, hero, she laughed. Take your frustration out on my pets.
Before Jason could go after her, the giant bronze sundials at either end of the fountain swung open. Two snarling gold beasts, flesh and blood-winged dragons, crawled out from the pits below. Each was the size of a camper van, maybe not large compared to Festus, but large enough.
So that's what's in the kennels,
Leo said meekly. The dragons spread their wings and hissed. Piper could feel the heat coming off their glittering skin. One turned his angry orange eyes on her.
Don't look them in the eye, Jason warned. They'll paralyze you.
Indeed.
Medea was leisurely riding the escalator up, leaning against the handrail as she watched the fun.
These two dears have been with me a long time. Sun dragons, you know, gifts from my grandfather Helios. They pulled my chariot when I left Corinth, and now they will be your destruction. Ta-ta!
The dragons lunged. Leo and Jason charged to intercept. Piper was amazed how fearlessly the boys attacked, working like a team who had trained together for years. Medea was almost to the second floor, where she'd be able to choose from a wide assortment of deadly appliances.
Oh, no, you don't, Piper growled, and took off after her.
When Medea spotted Piper, she started climbing in earnest. She was quick for a 3,000-year-old lady. Piper climbed at top speed, taking the steps three at a time, and still she couldn't catch her. Medea didn't stop at floor two. She hopped the next escalator and continued to ascend. The potions, Piper thought. Of course that's what she would go for. She was famous for potions. Down below, Piper heard the battle raging. Leo was blowing his safety whistle, and Jason was yelling to keep the dragon's attention. Piper didn't dare look, not while she was running with a dagger in her hand. She could just see herself tripping and stabbing herself in the nose. That would be super heroic. She grabbed a shield from an armor mannequin on floor 3 and continued to climb. She imagined Coach Hedge yelling in her mind, just like back in gym class at Wilderness School.
"Move it, McLean! You call that escalator climbing?"
She reached the top floor, breathing hard, but she was too late. Medea had reached the potions counter. The sorceress grabbed a swan-shaped vial, the blue one that caused painful death, and Piper did the only thing that came to mind. She threw her shield. Medea turned triumphantly just in time to get hit in the chest by a 50-pound metal frisbee. She stumbled backward, crashing over the counter, breaking vials and knocking down shelves. When the sorceress stood from the wreckage, her dress was stained a dozen different colors. Many of the stains were smoldering and glowing.
"Fool!" Medea wailed. "Do you have any idea what so many potions will do when mixed?"
"Kill you?" Piper said hopefully. The carpet began to steam around Medea's feet. She coughed, and her face contorted in pain. Or was she faking? Below, Leo called, "Jason, help!" Piper risked a quick look and almost sobbed in despair. One of the dragons had Leo pinned to the floor. It was baring its fangs, ready to snap. Jason was all the way across the room battling the other dragon, much too far away to assist.
"You've doomed us all!" Medea screamed.
Smoke was rolling across the carpet as the stain spread, throwing sparks and setting fires in the clothing racks.
"You have only seconds before this concoction consumes everything and destroys the building. There's no time." Crash!
The stained glass ceiling splintered in a rain of multicolored shards, and Festus the bronze dragon dropped into the department store. He hurtled into the fray, snatching up a sun dragon in each claw. Only now did Piper appreciate just how big and strong their metal friend was.
"That's my boy!" Leo yelled.
Festus flew halfway up in the atrium, then hurled the sun dragons into the pits they'd come from. Leo raced to the fountain and pressed the marble tile, closing the sundials. They shuddered as the dragons banged against them, trying to get out. But for the moment, they were contained. Medea cursed in some ancient language. The whole fourth floor was on fire now. The air filled with noxious gas. Even with the roof open, Piper could feel the heat intensifying. She backed up to the edge of the railing, keeping her dagger pointed toward Medea.
"I will not be abandoned again."
The sorceress knelt and snatched up the red healing potion, which had somehow survived the crash.
"You want your boyfriend's memory restored? Take me with you."
Piper glanced behind her. Leo and Jason were on board Festus's back. The bronze dragon flapped his mighty wings, snatched the two cages with the satyr and the storm spirits in his claws, and began to ascend. The building rumbled. Fire and smoke curled up the walls, melting the railings, turning the air to acid.
"You'll never survive your quest without me," Medea growled. "Your boy hero will stay ignorant forever, and your father will die. Take me with you."
For one heartbeat, Piper was tempted. Then she saw Medea's grim smile. The sorceress was confident in her powers of persuasion, confident that she could always make a deal, always escape and win in the end. "Not today, witch." Piper jumped over the side. She plummeted for only a second before Leo and Jason caught her, hauling her aboard the dragon. She heard Medea screaming in rage as they soared through the broken roof and over downtown Chicago. Then the department store exploded behind them. Chapter 29. Leo. Leo kept looking back. He half expected to see those nasty sun dragons toting a flying chariot with a screaming magical saleswoman throwing potions. But nothing followed them. He steered the dragon toward the southwest. Eventually, the smoke from the burning department store faded in the distance, but Leo didn't relax until the suburbs of Chicago gave way to snowy fields and the sun began to set.
"Good job, Festus,"
he patted the dragon's metal hide.
"You did awesome."
The dragon shuddered. Gears popped and clicked in his neck. Leo frowned. He didn't like those noises. If the control disk was failing again... No, hopefully it was something minor. Something he could fix.
"I'll give you a tune-up next time we land," Leo promised. "You've earned some motor oil and Tabasco sauce."
Festus whirled his teeth, but even that sounded weak. He flew at a steady pace, his great wings angling to catch the wind, but he was carrying a heavy load. 2 cages in his claws plus 3 people on his back. The more Leo thought about it, the more worried he got. Even metal dragons had limits. "Leo," Piper patted his shoulder. "You feeling okay?"
"Yeah, not bad for a brainwashed zombie."
He hoped he didn't look as embarrassed as he felt.
"Thanks for saving us back there, Beauty Queen. If you hadn't talked me out of that spell..."
"Don't worry about it," Piper said. But Leo worried a lot. He felt terrible about how easily Medea had set him against his best friend. And those feelings hadn't come from nowhere. His resentment of the way Jason always got the spotlight and didn't really seem to need him. Leo did feel that way sometimes, even if he wasn't proud of it. What bothered him more was the news about his mom. Medea had seen the future down in the underworld. That was how her patron, the woman in the black earthen robes, had come to the machine shop 7 years ago to scare him, ruin his life. That's how his mother had died, because of something Leo might do someday. So in a weird way, even if his fire powers weren't to blame, Mom's death was still his fault. When they had left Medea in that exploding store, Leo had felt a little too good. He hoped she wouldn't make it out and would go right back to the fields of punishment, where she belonged. Those feelings didn't make him proud either. And if souls were coming back from the underworld, was it possible Leo's mom could be brought back? He tried to put the idea aside. That was Frankenstein thinking. It wasn't natural. It wasn't right. Medea might have been brought back to life, but she hadn't seemed quite human, with the hissing nails and the glowing head and whatnot. No, Leo's mom had passed on. Thinking any other way would just drive Leo nuts. Still, the thought kept poking at him, like an echo of Medea's voice.
"We're going to have to put down soon," he warned his friends. "Couple more hours, maybe, to make sure Medea's not following us. I don't think Festus can fly much longer than that."
"Yeah," Piper agreed. "Coach Hedge probably wants to get out of his canary cage, too. Question is, where are we going?"
"The Bay Area," Leo guessed.
His memories of the department store were fuzzy, but he seemed to remember hearing that.
"Didn't Medea say something about Oakland?"
Piper didn't respond for so long. Leo wondered if he'd said something wrong. "Piper's dad," Jason put in. "Something's happened to your dad, right? He got lured into some kind of trap." Piper let out a shaky breath.
"Look, Medea said you would both die in the Bay Area. And besides, even if we went there, the Bay Area is huge. First, we need to find Aeolus and drop off the storm spirits. Boreas said Aeolus was the only one who could tell us exactly where to go."
Leo grunted.
"So how do we find Aeolus?"
Jason leaned forward.
"You mean you don't see it?"
He pointed ahead of them, but Leo didn't see anything except clouds and the lights of a few towns glowing in the dusk.
What?
Leo asked.
That.
Whatever it is, Jason said.
In the air.
Leo glanced back. Piper looked just as confused as he was.
Right, Leo said. Could you be more specific on the whatever it is part?
Like a vapor trail, Jason said. Except it's glowing. Really faint, but it's definitely there. We've been following it since Chicago, so I figured you saw it. Leo shook his head.
Maybe Festus can sense it. You think Aeolus made it?
Well, it's a magic trail in the wind, Jason said. Aeolus is the wind god. I think he knows we've got prisoners for him. He's telling us where to fly. Or it's another trap, Piper said. Her tone worried Leo. She didn't just sound nervous. She sounded broken, with despair, like they'd already sealed their fate, and like it was her fault.
Pipes, you all right?
He asked. Don't call me that.
Okay, fine. You don't like any of the names I make up for you, but if your dad's in trouble and we can help...
You can't, she said, her voice getting shakier. Look, I'm tired. If you don't mind... She leaned back against Jason and closed her eyes. All right, Leo thought, pretty clear signal she didn't want to talk. They flew in silence for a while. Festus seemed to know where he was going. He kept his course, gently curving toward the southwest and hopefully Aeolus's fortress. Another wind god to visit, a whole new flavor of crazy. Oh boy, Leo couldn't wait. He had way too much on his mind to sleep, but now that he was out of danger, his body had different ideas. His energy level was crashing. The monotonous beat of the dragon's wings made his eyes feel heavy. His head started to nod. Catch a few Z's, Jason said. It's cool. Hand me the reins.
Nah, I'm okay.
Leo, Jason said, you're not a machine. Besides, I'm the only one who can see the vapor trail. I'll make sure we stay on course. Leo's eyes started to close on their own.
All right, maybe just...
He didn't finish the sentence before slumping forward against the dragon's warm neck. In his dream, he heard a voice, full of static, like a bad AM radio.
Hello? Is this thing working?
Leo's vision came into focus. Sort of. Everything was hazy and gray, with bands of interference running across his sight. He'd never dreamed with a bad connection before. He seemed to be in a workshop. Out of the corners of his eyes, he saw bench saws, metal lathes, and tool cages. A forge glowed cheerfully against one wall. It wasn't the camp forge, too big. Not Bunker 9, much warmer and more comfortable, obviously not abandoned. Then Leo realized something was blocking the middle of his view, something large and fuzzy, and so close, Leo had to cross his eyes to see it properly. It was a large, ugly face.
Holy mother!
He yelped. The face backed away and came into focus. Staring down at him was a bearded man in grimy blue coveralls. His face was lumpy and covered with welts, as if he'd been bitten by a million bees or dragged across gravel. Possibly both.
Humph, the man said. Holy father, boy. I should think you'd know the difference.
Leo blinked.
Hephaestus?
Being in the presence of his father for the first time, Leo probably should have been speechless or awestruck or something. But after what he'd been through the last couple of days, with Cyclopes and a sorceress and a face in the potty sludge, all Leo felt was a surge of complete annoyance.
Now you show up? He demanded. After 15 years? Great parenting, Furface. Where do you get off sticking your ugly nose into my dreams?
The god raised an eyebrow. A little spark caught fire in his beard. Then he threw back his head and laughed so loudly the tools rattled on the workbenches.
"You sound just like your mother,"
Hephaestus said.
"I miss Esperanza."
"She's been dead 7 years," Leo's voice trembled. "Not that you care."
"But I do care, boy. About both of you."
"Uh-huh. Which is why I never saw you before today."
The god made a rumbling sound in his throat, but he looked more uncomfortable than angry. He pulled a miniature motor from his pocket and began fiddling absently with the pistons, just the way Leo did when he was nervous.
"I'm not good with children," the god confessed. "Or people. Well, any organic life forms, really. I thought about speaking to you at your mom's funeral. Then again, when you were in fifth grade, that science project you made, steam-powered chicken chucker, very impressive."
"You saw that?"
Hephaestus pointed to the nearest work table, where a shiny bronze mirror showed a hazy image of Leo asleep on the dragon's back.
"Is that me?" Leo asked. "Like, me right now? Having this dream? Looking at me having a dream?"
Hephaestus scratched his beard.
"Now you've confused me. But, yes, it's you. I'm always keeping an eye on you, Leo. But talking to you is, different."
"You're scared," Leo said.
"Crommets and gears," the god yelled. "Of course not."
"Yeah, you're scared."
But Leo's anger seeped away. He'd spent years thinking about what he'd say to his dad if they ever met. How Leo would chew him out for being a deadbeat. Now, looking at that bronze mirror, Leo thought about his dad watching his progress over the years. Even his stupid science experiments. Maybe Hephaestus was still a jerk, but Leo kind of understood where he was coming from. Leo knew about running away from people, not fitting in. He knew about hiding out in a workshop rather than trying to deal with organic life forms.
"So," Leo grumbled, "you keep track of all your kids? You got like 12 back at camp. How'd you even..." "Never mind. I don't want to know."
Hephaestus might have blushed, but his face was so beat up and red, it was hard to tell.
"Gods are different from mortals, boy. We can exist in many places at once, wherever people call on us, wherever our sphere of influence is strong. In fact, it's rare our entire essence is ever together in one place. Our true form. It's dangerous, powerful enough to destroy any mortal who looks upon us. So yes, lots of children. Add to that our different aspects, Greek and Roman..."
The god's fingers froze on his engine project.
"Or, that is to say, being a god is complicated. And yes, I try to keep an eye on all my children. But you especially."
Leo was pretty sure Hephaestus had almost slipped and said something important, but he wasn't sure what.
"Why contact me now?" Leo asked. "I thought the gods had gone silent."
"We have," Hephaestus grumped. "Zeus's orders. Very strange, even for him. He's blocked all visions, dreams, and iris messages to and from Olympus. Hermes is sitting around bored out of his mind because he can't deliver the mail. Fortunately, I kept my old pirate broadcasting equipment."
Hephaestus patted a machine on the table. It looked like a combination satellite dish, V6 engine, and espresso maker. Each time Hephaestus jostled the machine, Leo's dream flickered and changed color.
"Use this in the Cold War," the god said fondly. "Radio free Hephaestus. Those were the days. I keep it around for pay-per-view, mostly. Or making viral brain videos."
"Viral brain videos?"
"But no, it's come in handy again. If Zeus knew I was contacting you, he'd have my hide.
Why is Zeus being such a jerk?
Ruff. He excels at that, boy.
Hephaestus called him boy, as if Leo were an annoying machine part, an extra washer, maybe, that had no clear purpose, but that Hephaestus didn't want to throw away for fear he might need it someday. Not exactly heartwarming. Then again, Leo wasn't sure he wanted to be called son. Leo wasn't about to start calling this big, awkward, ugly guy dad. Hephaestus got tired of his engine and tossed it over his shoulder. Before it could hit the floor, it sprouted helicopter wings and flew itself into a recycling bin.
It was the Second Titan War, I suppose, Hephaestus said. That's what got Zeus upset. We gods were, well, embarrassed. Don't think there's any other way to say it.
But you won, Leo said.
The god grunted.
We won because the demigods of...
Again, he hesitated, as if he'd almost made a slip.
Of Camp Half-Blood took the lead. We won because our children fought our battles for us, smarter than we did. If we'd relied on Zeus's plan, we would have all gone down to Tartarus fighting the storm giant Typhon, and Cronus would have won. Had enough mortals won our war for us, but then that young upstart Percy Jackson...
The guy who's missing.
Yes, him. He had the nerve to turn down our offer of immortality and tell us to pay better attention to our children. No offense.
Oh, how could I take offense? Please, go on ignoring me.
Mighty understanding of you.
Hephaestus frowned, then sighed wearily.
That was sarcasm, wasn't it? Machines don't have sarcasm, usually. But as I was saying, the gods felt ashamed, shown up by mortals. At first, of course, we were grateful. But after a few months, those feelings turned bitter. We're gods, after all. We need to be admired, looked up to, held in awe and admiration.
Even if you're wrong?
Especially then. And to have Jackson refuse our gift, as if being mortal was somehow better than being a god. Well, that stuck in Zeus's craw. He decided it was high time we got back to traditional values. Gods were to be respected. Our children were to be seen and not visited. Olympus was closed. At least that was part of his reasoning. And, of course, we started hearing of bad things stirring under the earth.
The giants, you mean? Monsters reforming instantly. The dead rising again. Little stuff like that?
Aye, boy.
Hephaestus turned a knob on his pirate broadcasting machine. Leo's dream sharpened to full color, but the god's face was such a riot of red welts and yellow and black bruises, Leo wished it would go back to black and white.
Zeus thinks he can reverse the tide,
the god said.
Lull the earth back to sleep as long as we stay quiet. None of us really believes that. And I don't mind saying... We're in no shape to fight another war. We barely survived the Titans. If we're repeating the old pattern, what comes next is even worse.
The giants, Leo said. Hera said demigods and gods had to join forces to defeat them. Is that true?
I hate to agree with my mother about anything. But yes... Those giants are tough to kill, boy. They're a different breed.
Breed? You make them sound like racehorses.
Ha, the god said. More like war dogs. Back in the beginning, you see, everything in creation came from the same parents, Gea and Uranos, earth and sky. They had their different batches of children. Your Titans, your Elder Cyclopes, and so forth. Then Cronos, the head Titan. Well, you've probably heard how he chopped up his father Uranos with a scythe and took over the world.
Then we gods came along, children of the Titans, and defeated them. But that wasn't the end of it. The Earth bore a new